Good afternoon, and first of all, let me apologize because I am not going to mention machine learning in any part of my talk. But my talk is going to refer to something which is still contained in the title of our conference, which is quantum design. And it's an application of quantum design in which the only neural network involved is a very primitive one. It's the one that's contained here and in the brain of my boss, which is Tilman Hens at Heidelberg University. So first of all, before starting getting deep into physics, let me say something about Heidelberg University. So this is Heidelberg. It's not a very nice picture. I have better one laughter. But in Heidelberg now, we are having this excellent cluster from the German Science Foundation, basically. And this cluster is about a collaboration between, you see, this is the symbol, is the symbol. It means that there is a collaboration between many, many groups. And these groups are also dealing with physics, mathematics, and complex data. And so there are going to be a lot of activities and a lot of money and research involved in Heidelberg. And so if you're interested, I am kind of involved in the decision, at least with respect to the young aspects of this cluster. So you can come and talk to me about that. I have a better photo of the Heidelberg that I did, which when it's so big, it doesn't work, but at least it's nicer in my opinion. So the system I'm gonna talk, it's a kind of an easy system if you think about it. So imagining it is very easy. They are just fermions of two species that I will call, for obvious reason, up and down. And these two species of fermion are in the continuum. So with respect to other talks, there is not going to be lattice in my application. So they are in continuum space in two dimensions. And they have an Hamiltonian where they have only attractive contact interaction. And obviously, since they are fermions, to have S-wave interaction, the interaction is going to be only between different species. OK, so this system, so I would like to connect to the first presentation by Giuseppe. This physics is going to be a little bit in this area. So, sorry, so here we are. So we are a little bit in this area, no? I didn't want, so in the beginning I was thinking to put myself here, but I think that Giuseppe was referring of repulsive fermions, and repulsive fermions are a bit harder, let's say. But we are a little bit inside this terra incognita, and we can do this because we collaborate with experimentalists, and so we have cold atoms. So the cool things about the system is that the system is two-dimensional. And as such, it has a very strange property that it has a symmetry. So we have had a lot of discussion about symmetries. And the symmetry the system has, that the system has no length scales. And this, if you reason a little bit about two dimension, you will see that the interaction energy, when it's a contact interaction, is scaled like the kinetic energy. And so there is no scale in this stupid system. So this is a situation that appears in other system, mainly in classical system close to a phase transition, or also in quantum system close to a phase transition. And also it appears in Fermi systems, which are in three dimensions, but they are in the very strongly interacting regime. So this is this case of the unitary Fermi gas. So the cool thing about two dimension is that the same situation that appears in some peculiar system, so in some fine-tuned system in three dimension, in two dimension, it appears everywhere somehow. It doesn't depend on interaction. This scale invariance doesn't depend on interaction. So what is scale invariance? Scale invariance is an easy concept. It's the same concept that you have for free particles. So for an ideal gas, when you do a dilatation of your space. So you take your system. As I said, I am in the continuum. So x is a continuous variable. I can make a transformation that zoom in or out my space. And you know that when you do this transformation, the wave function remains invariant, and the Hamiltonian is covariant in the sense that it gets rescaled by a constant factor. OK. So this is cool. And as I said, when you introduce interaction into your free particle system, this is not normally be preserved because your interaction may depend on the spatial degree of freedom. And so when you do the scale transformation, it may be covariant, but with another power. And so the total Hamiltonian will be not covariant anymore. You see? Okay, the case alpha equal to 2 is still covariant, but it's a very peculiar case. In two dimensions, however, this is true just by the fact that we can model contact interaction with a delta function. And if you know the scaling property of the delta function, you will immediately realize that when d is equal to 2, the total Hamiltonian with contact interaction will remain covariant with respect to this zooming in or out your spatial degree of freedom, which is the key property that I'm going to discuss. Okay, so before getting a little bit in the middle of the things, let me check on an easy system. So let me take a system which is obviously scale invariant, so the free particles, p square, a single free particle, and let me add a parabolic confinement. So I add a parabolic confinement because in my cold atom system I'm going to have a parabolic confinement. And if I have a parabolic confinement, my single particle is just an harmonic oscillator, and I know the time evolution of operator exactly. You know this time evolution operator? So if you don't know, it's written here. So whatever kind of time-dependent frequency I do to an harmonic oscillator, I can write the wave function at every time if I know the initial one. And this is the form the wave function is going to take. OK, and so obviously I know also the correlation function, the density profile, and whatever you want. Well, OK, you may ask what it means you know, because you have just a parameter here that you haven't specified. But this parameter, I can obtain it by solving a simple differential equation. So this quantum harmonic oscillator is not quantum at all when you look at the dynamics, because the dynamics, it can be obtained exactly just by solving a differential equation. So if I solve a single differential, nonlinear differential equation, so just a particle in some strange potential, then I can use this information, I can use the lambda I obtained to have the whole time dependence of all of whatever function of my oscillator. Okay? So here, this example of the quench. What's interesting is that if my system is scale invariant, the same exact evolution operator that I apply to the harmonic oscillator is going to work or even for the many-body system. So look, I put this big X here to say this system depends on the coordinate of all the particle, of all the particle contained in my system, but this doesn't matter. I can rescale this vector X with the lambda that solves my nonlinear differential equation. That's the Hermarkov equation, if you want to know. And I can use the same evolution operator, and this is an exact property. Okay, so this is exact. It's just due to scale invariance. If my system is scale invariant, this has to be the exact time evolution of the system. And if you want to look at the proof, there are very good theoreticians that prove that. Okay? Unfortunately, what I said is true if the system were scale invariant, so if there were no length scale involved, but the system is not scale invariant because of its quantum nature. So you may say, okay, I said before that it was scale invariant, and it is scale invariant when you treat it at semi-classical level. So if you take a bunch of classical particles, or if you take harmonic oscillators, quantum, they are going, and you couple them with quadratic interaction, this is going to remain scale invariant. But when you put interacting delta potential, the delta potential, unfortunately, is not a well-defined potential in 2D. And since it's not well-defined, it leads to divergence when you try to quantize it. And these divergences are not unphysical. They are just telling you, look, if you put attractive interaction between fermions in 2D, you are going to create a bound state. You are going to create it no matter how small the amplitude of the interaction it is, because this is a property of 2D delta potential. And so, and the presence of this stupid bound state breaks my scale invariance, because the energy of the bound state is related to a length scale. That's the length scale, the size of the bound state, the average size. It's a quantum problem, so there is no size, but there is an average size of the quantum of the bound state. And this is going to break my scale invariance, my beloved scale invariance. Okay, this is well known. You can relate it to this scattering between particles, and if you see the scattering between particles in 2D, you are going to see that the two-body scattering amplitude depends on log k, where k is the momentum of the two particles in the center of mass of the two particles that are scattering between each other, and a to d, which is the size of this bound state. And obviously, if there were no bound state, that means a to d equal to infinity, then it means what it means. So that means a to d equal to infinity. That it means that this fk, you will say, okay, it's going to be zero, but it's not zero, because if you take the imaginary part, it's going to remain some constant. And so basically, if there were no bound state, this means that there are a constant time shift that doesn't depend, the constant phase shift that doesn't depend on k. And so this makes the system basically non-interacting. But when you have a bound state, you have this momentum dependence, which breaks your scale invariance. OK, this can be related to some RG, but I don't want to talk about it. So the presence of these bound states lead to this nice phase diagram for my system. So if I start with this quantity, which is big and positive, I am in a region where you have where I have a transition of the BKT type between fermions, which are in the standard, so disordered state, to a superfluid state, and the transition is of BKT type. While if this log KA is very negative, I have a transition here, but the transition is more like the one that appears on bosons. Okay, so sorry, I have to skip all of this because we don't have time. What I'm gonna do now? So, as I was telling you about this ground state, about this phase diagram, you have realized that this phase diagram is possible only if the particles can pair between each other and create this superfluid state. So it's clear that the presence of the bound state is going to have some influence on the equilibrium state of the system. But now let's look at the dynamics. And now I look to the dynamics. So imagine that I have my cold atom system into this parabolic potential. They are there. They interact. They are fermions, two species. And I change by a quench the trapping potential. So they were trapped with a certain frequency, and I change abruptly this frequency. What they are going to do, they are going to start oscillating. And indeed, they do. And if you measure the density at different instants, you discover immediately that you can look at the profile, and you can scale the profile on top of each other. So it looks like the dynamical evolution is still scale invariant, which is something very, very strange. So the presence of the bound state influenced the phase diagram of the system, influenced the two-particle physics. But when you look at the many-body dynamics, it looks like the many-body dynamics is unaffected by the system, because I can still find a lambda, a scale factor, that maps my evolution at different time one onto each other. So I have this self-similarity. And indeed, you can do this. And it's crazy because you can do it. You know that in the BCS regime, you may expect this because interactions are very weak. So the bound state in this regime is going to be a very large bound state, very shallow. So it's normal that it doesn't affect the dynamics too much. On the other side, in the BC regime, the bound state is so tight that you do not expect to break anything at the many-body level. They are bosons, scale invariant bosons. They are very tight, and you don't see the bound state. But in the middle, you were expecting to see some large deviation from the scale invariance, because your bound states is right on the sides of interparticle distance, and you will expect many body physics to see a lot from this bound state, to have a lot of correction. But this doesn't happen. And indeed, there have been a lot of experimental effort to try to measure the entity of this many-body breaking of scale invariance, of this quantum anomaly, how this quantum anomaly affects the many-body physics, by measuring the shift in the interaction frequency of the oscillation. Because you know, when this cloud oscillates, it has a certain frequency. This frequency for a scale invariant system is the same as for a non-interacting system. But if the scale invariance is broken, you expect to have deviations, and you can quantify it theoretically. And as you see, the theory is this black line, we're expecting a big correction in the crossover regime, where the bound state is much of like the size of the interparticle distance. But when you measure it, it's very small. You see, very small. So theory was predicting 10%, and experiment is compatible with 2%. Three experiments, so not just one, but three experiments. So we said, okay, how can we, so is it really relevant, this anomaly, for the many-body system? I showed you that it's irrelevant for the frequency shift. Is it relevant for the density profile? But we had an idea, so let's check at the momentum space. And we asked to our experimental friends, can you please give us the density momentum space? And they are smart enough that they can do it with some experimental technique. And we are going to check if the scale invariant evolution is going to work for the density momentum space, which is nothing but a correlation function of your system. So you can predict its evolution based on the scale invariance, as I told you before. And we are going to compare the cloud at the inner turning point, so when it's very tight, and when it's very shallow, so at the two extremes of my breathing oscillation. This goes back and forth, and I'm going to check this and this. And I'm going to compare, and this is the blue and the red, and I'm going to try to use the same lambda that I had from the real space to use it to collapse the two curves in momentum space. This is to be like that thing for the scale invariant, so the lambda has to be just one. And we tried it, and in the BEC regime, it works nicely. In the BCS regime, it works nicely. But in the crossover, it fails. It fails greatly. And it fails because, as we expect, there are corrections by quantum anomaly, but these are hidden, very deeply hidden, into the correlation function. So you have to be a little bit smart to see them. But this is very important because this NK is the one that sets the critical behavior of the system. So this NK is the one that shows the onset of superfluidity. So the fact that you have such a strong influence from quantum anomaly in this region means that you're also going to change a lot the superfluid properties of your system. And indeed, we computed the decay of the first particle, so of the one-body matrix correlation, one-body density matrix, that has to decay as a power law in a superfluid state. Okay, you may say that in the trap this is not like that, there are a lot of issues, so we can discuss if you want, but believe me, we checked that it decays as a power law, and this power, this eta, is going to give me the superfluid density, or loosely, the superfluid density of my system. And so we computed this superfluid density at the inner and at the outer turning point, and we compared it with the one that you will obtain for a scale invariant system that we can predict. And we find that there is a huge variation in the superfluid density due to the quantum anomaly. And as such, it appears now evident, sorry, I have to go back, why you have this peak of DTC occurring exactly at the crossover. All of these properties are related to each other. the peak in the critical temperature, the enhance of superfluid density are all related to the same effect, to the quantum anomaly, so to the effect that this bound state gives on the many body ground state. Okay, so this is basically all that I wanted to say. Let me just make a little bit of the conclusion. So we have a system that is scale invariant if you treat at classical level, but when I say classical level, I mean that I can treat it like free particle, classical particle, but also I can treat it semi-classically like waves. So both the semi-classical description and description of high temperature will show complete scale invariance. But when I go to the full quantized picture, when I have really to take into account quantum fluctuations, this breaks the scale invariance. And I've studied the effect of these breaks of scale invariance in the crossover between Bose and a Fermi. So in the crossover, when the system is changing from a fermionic to a bosonic behavior, and I have shown that the breathing of the frequency, the breathing frequency of the cloud has a very small correction, that the real space density profile has a very outrageously small correction, even in the crossover regime where I expect it to be large. And if I want to find this large correction that I expected theoretically, I have to look at the one-body density matrix or the momentum space density, and there I can find I can find this quantum anomaly in its full glory. Okay, so thank you very much.
A square lattice. Mm-hmm. I assume that the lattice is going to break naturally the scale invariance, but the phase diagram that you showed, I think, looks very similar with the peak in. So can you comment on that?
Because so basically, also this system has a breaking of scale invariance coming from corrections. The main point is how much the effect of the lattice will be. So what lattice spacing you are going to put? So let me argument better. So obviously, no real potential is a contact potential. This potential will have not only a contact part, but also some effective radius. So corrections from scale invariant behavior are also present in this system, not due to the quantum anomaly, really due to the mechanics of the particle. But these corrections are much smaller than the one arising from quantum anomaly. So if you put this system on a lattice, but the filling is low enough, the system is not going to see the lattice. And so it's going to behave exactly as I say. So it's when this correction is the leading one in this case, and which the experimentalists, they can check this to very deep details. Oh, it's coming from above.
So in one plot, you were showing theoretical prediction for the quantum anomaly, which was about 20%, while the experimental data were about 2%. What theory was that?
Yes. So this is, you may say the theory is not so good, and indeed it's true that's not so good. But in any case, so the theory is a hydrodynamic theory in which you take, I was thinking to have less time, but I was fast, so I can comment a bit on it. So you see the quantum anomaly decently when you look at the equilibrium, no? So if the system were not anomalous, so perfectly scale invariant, the energy and the pressure were going to behave exactly the same way. So the same as it happens in a 2D non-interacting gas. The pressure and the energy are the same guy. Due to the anomaly, you have a small correction between energy and pressure in the system. And this you can see it. So there have been measurements with cold atoms, but there are also auxiliary field quantum Monte Carlo result, which is this on the right. So this she and others. So you see this quantity, a bit of equilibrium. It's not so small. And you see it's peaked exactly as you expect to be peaked, around log KFA equal to 0. So I'm sorry, these plots, everybody is using different bounds. But if you see, all the peaks are around the 0 of log KFA. So the what I was saying, the point is, if you insert the equilibrium expectation, but that you know it's very well confirmed because this Monte Carlo data also agree with the measurements they have done at equilibrium, into an hydrodynamic simulation, you get the prediction that I told you. And you, in principle, expect the prediction to be, which is this one, to be pretty good, because in the strongly interacting crossover regime, you expect hydrodynamic to work because you have this local equilibration and blah, blah, blah. And so people were expecting this to hold very strongly.
One more fast
question. can you
just a moment, there is another one.
Okay, so my question is, why can't be the violation of scaling due to the spontaneous symmetry break?
So the violation of scaling?
So if your Hamiltonian, apparently your Hamiltonian has a symmetry, so you have to have the scaling rule in dimension,
yeah,
like you showed at the beginning. So what if if you have spontaneous, I just wanted you to comment the difference between the anomaly and the spontaneous symmetry break.
So basically the answer is going to be the same as given before for correction due to the lattice. So if you have a breaking of the symmetry due to other mechanism, whatever mechanism, you have to compare which breaking is better, if the one coming from quantum anomaly or the one that's coming from the whatever other mechanism that is breaking your...
Yeah, why do you conclude here it's a quantum anomaly?
Because we checked all the other effects and we know that they are much smaller. So we know that the leading effect is the one caused by the bound state.
Okay, thank you.
Can you give more intuition? Why is it that it did not show up in the dynamics? Why did the solution work so well? How do I know from the theory point of view where it will show up and where it won't?
I can be only heuristic. So obviously, one reason why the theory is not working so well is that everybody thinks that this hydrodynamics works well because you have this strongly correlated regime. But actually, for this system that has this additional scale invariant symmetry, I think this is completely violated. And we have preliminary results about that this shows that this this system, even when the interaction is strong, you shouldn't look at the interaction, but you should look at the derivative of the interaction with respect to a change of scale. This is the guy that is really playing a role of the interaction, the variation of the interaction energy, not the interaction energy on itself. So people were losingly thinking, okay, the strength of the interaction energy is going to give me how interacting is this system, but it's not true because you have a part of the interaction energy which is in this scale invariant, and this part you have to subtract. So this is why the theory doesn't work so well, and the reason why you don't see it in real space, I guess that is due to the fact that only critical modes that are k equal to 0 see. Somehow they need to see the bound state because it's the bound state that caused the transition to appear. So only these low momentum modes are able to see the presence of this bound state and to correlate the bounds. So to see the correlation arising from this bound state. So if you look at real space, all the modes are integrated and this information is lost. But this is intuition. I don't know if it's true or not. Thank you.